the stare of the champion against the challenger. The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
Jay puts a left hook again. Jackson John Smith. He's on roller skates and he comes back down. Oh! And down goes Smith. What a knockout! Mamma mia!
This is InTheFight.net's In The Fight show on Sportinarium Radio, talking MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing. Follow the show on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at ITF Show. And now from Philadelphia, Doc, Brett, In The Fight.
Oh my God!
It is Thursday, so you know what that means. Welcome to InTheFight.net's In The Fight show on Sportinarium Radio, presented as always by Michael's Glass Company, 215-338-3293 in Philadelphia. The Paul's Table, 70 East Lancaster Avenue in Ardmore, TKO Store, TEEKOstore.com, and of course, Sportinarium, Sportinarium.com. I am Mike. I am joined, as always, by Brett. How is it going?
It is going. I am psyched. It is fight week. It is a pay-per-view fight week, and it is a Conor McGregor fight week. That's really all you need to say. I mean, not that we need to end the episode, but yeah.
And that's it. We're going home. But I guess we were talking offline. I guess we need to we're in the UK, obviously, on Sportinarium Radio. We have to congratulate our friends, the English side of the UK. The England wins. They defeated who in the Euro?
They defeated Denmark in the semifinals. So they will now take on Italy on Sunday. So for our English listeners, this is a huge weekend because you have UFC 264 followed by the Euro final, which they were saying, and pardon me, I'm not a huge soccer fan, football fan for those across the pond. I believe this is the first major title that they've potentially could win since, I believe it was the 66 World Cup. So, yeah, this is a big deal.
It's a big deal, and they won in, what, quadruple overtime or something like that?
Extra look, time, yeah, I believe that's what it's called.
I think we need to let everyone know, like, we're football guys. Goal Line Stand, you know, at GL Stand Show. Maybe coming to Sportinarium soon. We'll see. Wink, wink, nod, nod. We're not necessarily soccer guys. We were kind of always raised that, some of us were raised that it was a communist sport. Why a communist sport, I don't know, but nonetheless, that's how we were raised. I have kids that are playing it, so I've started. We had this conversation the other day. I've started paying attention a little bit more, but you really get into the international flavor.
Yeah, I get it. I got to tell you, as much as I'm not a huge soccer fan, some of my favorite sports documentaries have been. I find it very interesting because it's one of the oldest sports, and it really helps document sort of the relationships between all the different countries. So to me, it's very fascinating. And also, I love to see the national pride associated with it. It's just something you don't get in America. I mean, with Americans, you get it somewhat with the Women's World Cup. That's where we dominate.
That's the only thing in the United States that you're going to get it with is the Women's World. I'm thinking because with the Olympics coming up, Where were we as a country? And this is because we're a bunch of assholes. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. You know, we don't take pride in that kind of thing. It's not even basketball anymore. Like the Dream Team,
it's different too. Because it's such a juggernaut that it's typically not competitive. And if it is competitive, that's really an embarrassment for our country. Whereas it's just a lot different.
So we're essentially the Soviet Red Army team in basketball.
Yes, yes. If you'd like to put it that way, I guess so.
Right. I mean, to some extent, hockey. I can remember a couple years ago there was a wonderful Olympics. I think Vancouver. So this might even be.
We watched that together.
Yeah, you know, but that's not necessarily American. That was more of a hockey sports fan kind of thing.
It was a national moment in Canada. It was not a national moment in America.
Right. To me, it was that crying son of a bitch Sidney Crosby doing it again is what it came down to.
Yeah, it was a great game, though.
It was a great game. It was a great move. But yeah, we don't take pride in that kind of stuff. So congratulations to the English. You won in triple extra time. How did they win?
So Harry Kane, the captain, had a penalty kick. His penalty kick was stopped. It was a very nice save by Denmark. Unfortunately, the Denmark goalie was unable to corral the ball, and it went right back to Harry Kane for the big goal. So congrats to them. And by the way, also congrats to our Italian listeners.
Yes, yes, that is true too.
So best of luck to them as well.
I thought once the save was made, it's done.
No, it's live.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
I think you're thinking of when they're in penalty kicks.
Right. Yeah.
No, this was a penalty kick as in the regular course of the game.
Understood. Yes.
They were like 6 minutes away from the penalty kicks.
Understood.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I don't have as much of a problem with it. Yeah. Congratulations to the English. You know, good for you. You're advancing on. I will probably be watching because I do like international. We talked about this before off air. International competition at its finest is fantastic. When you get some of these crowds, it's going to be even better. So looking forward to that. Hopefully they can win and then follow it up with some proper 12, although it has been sold. But still, nonetheless, it is a Conor McGregor product. Watching UFC 264, McGregor Poirier 3. So we're going to talk MMA trilogies here. We're talking trilogy fights, and this is going to be fun. So we're going to talk Dustin, Conor, and then we're going to talk some other ones. So let's kind of get a quick recap here of what happened the first go around. I'm going to leave this to you because you're better at it than I am as far as detailing the MMA history, so to speak. You can put a little bit more detail, more memory to it. So let's go right to it. Dustin Conor won UFC 178 in 2014. So take it away.
Yeah. So Conor Dustin won. It was the featured fight on UFC 178. I don't even remember who the main event. I think the main event was Anthony Pettis against Gilbert Melendez, I believe. Nevertheless, Conor won via TKO 146 in round one. So this fight was at featherweight. For Conor, it was, okay, is he really legitimate? Is he really a top five fighter? Because Dustin was the best opponent he had yet to face. He had fought a very young Max Holloway, beat him. Then he fought Diego Brandão in Dublin with the crazy crowd. So this was this was his first time on a pay-per-view in the UFC. Really big deal. Came out, you know, this was unorthodox Conor, kicking Conor, spins, all of that stuff. And, you know, was able to hit. He really hit Poirier on the side of the head. Some people complained it was more in the back of the head, but 146 in the round one, I don't even know if Poirier landed a shot. You know, Poirier was pissed the whole week. There was bad blood between the two. And even Poirier acknowledged that Conor got in his head, which is something we're going to talk about. But so that was the first one. The second one, which we all know.
The main event was supposed to be John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson.
That got
canceled. It ended up being for the flyweight title, Demetrius Johnson,
Chris
Carrioso.
Do you have the co-main event in that?
I have the whole card right here. So
Is that when Brendan Schaub fought Travis Brown?
So I'll run down the card.
Okay.
Demetrius Johnson, aforementioned Donald Cerrone versus Eddie Alvarez in the lightweight. So this is
Eddie Alvarez's UFC debut.
Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, Yoel Romero, Tim Kennedy, Kat Zingano defeats Amanda Nunes.
Wow. That was Amanda Nunes' last loss.
Wow. Preliminary on Fox Sports, Dominic Cruz, Taiki Mizugaki, Jorge Masvidal, James Krause, not to be confused with the dude from that runs Cobra Kai, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Stephen Thompson, Patrick Cote, nice step out. Brian Ebersole defeated John Howard. Kevin, and then on the preliminaries, Kevin Lee defeats John Tuck.
Wow.
And Manvel Gamborian defeats Chris Gibson.
Wow.
Cody Gibson.
So a few interesting things. So it's interesting that Stephen Wonderboy Thompson's fighting in the co-main event of this event. The Tim Kennedy Yoel Romero fight was a very interesting one. That was Yoel Romero. Actually, both of them cheated during that fight. Yoel Romero didn't get off the stool after he almost got knocked out. Prior to that, Tim Kennedy had stuck his fingers in Yoel Romero's gloves to hold him, and then Yoel Romero eventually knocked out Tim Kennedy. It was a really good fight. That's really interesting. That's a very interesting card. I'm getting that mixed up with, I think, like 182, which I think was the Melendez Pettis fight. It was Pettis's last successful defense before he got handled by RDA. Nevertheless, that is what happened for Connor Dustin 1. That sent Connor further into the stratosphere. His next fight was against Dennis Seaver. Then he fought Chad Mendes, then Jose Aldo. And for Dustin, that was his last fight at featherweight. After that fight, he went up to lightweight. And since that fight, he's 11-2. So obviously, I mean, look, you know, we're talking about two, frankly, all-time greats. So, and yeah, this really was, it's interesting how they went on different paths. But so that was the first fight. Second fight we all kind of remember because it's a lot more recent. Took place this past January, UFC 257, the main event. Dustin won via TKO 232 into round two. Obviously, this fight was competed at lightweight. So that is the history as it relates to these two.
I think what's amazing is that it was 2021 that fight occurred, because it really feels, the second fight feels like it was forever ago. I don't know if it's just because of everything that's been going on, but to me, when we were looking at it and I'm looking back at it, I'm like, oh yeah, this was the Yas Island card. I forgot.
Yeah, and this was the first one was in the arena. There were actually some people in the arena, which it made for, to me, Conor McGregor can't be in an empty arena. He just can't be.
Now, we've talked about this, and we give credit where credit is due, you know, to our UK listeners. Like, oh, I'm a huge Ricky Hatton fan from the boxing perspective. I like the way the guy fought. You could put him in Philadelphia, he'd fit very well, but the fans made Ricky Hatton with the chance and everything. And the same goes with Conor McGregor. You know, my family has Irish descent, not as much as they thought. That's why I'm a Stipe guy, and the rest of them are all Irish people, but that's neither here nor there. It's fun when you have a fan base there, and I'm sure we're going to have some in Vegas who are going to be, I guess people can travel internationally. I don't know. But
I'm pretty sure they can, at least to a, yeah, I think
the
they can.
Irish in the United States, they're coming from Mayfair in Philly and they're going to Vegas, right? I don't know the Irish enclave in New York. They're going there, you know, so on and so forth. So it definitely makes it. I agree with you.
Yeah. So it was definitely the tale of two fights. You know, I think the biggest difference by the point of the second fight, first off, Dustin Poirier physically matured. I mean, this guy grew into not only just being a lightweight, but actually a larger lightweight. He was a big guy. You know, Connor, if you look at the two now, Connor is definitely the smaller man. And, you know, Poirier has gone on such a tear. And, you know, what's his nickname? He's the Diamond. And, you know, how are diamonds made? Through pressure. And that's exactly what Poirier has done or been involved in throughout the rest of his career since the last Conor fight. And, you know, fighting great fighters one after another, former champions. And so he's just been through the ringer, and he's so seasoned. And his game has developed. And, you know, he was throwing those calf kicks. By the beginning of the second round, McGregor was done and he didn't have his front leg to use. So he had to go for broke. And as we all know, McGregor's cardio can get compromised somewhere in around the 7-minute mark. That's why he lost 7.5 minutes. So, Yep, that is the history of this fight. It is very interesting, though.
Before we get into the what-ifs of this fight, why don't you run down here the five best performances for each guy in his career? Because I think that tells you the story a little bit of who they are.
Yeah, so, you know, when I was doing this exercise, it was really difficult because both of these guys have incredible shining moments. I'll start with Connor, and I'm going to go from five to one. So number five, I actually have his TKO of Poirier at UFC 178. Because again, that sort of stamped the fact that this guy's legit. You know, it's not just, he's not simply just an attraction who's going to fight, you know, marginally ranked fighters. Like, this guy can take off a title contender. Number four, I have his TKO over Cowboy Cerrone from January of 2020, right before the pandemic at UFC 246. I think this one historically is going to actually lose a lot of luster as it continues, because we've now since learned that the Cowboy that he fought really was washed up, unfortunately. And also, on top of that, Cowboy was never known. He always failed to show up for big fights. So you have Cowboy's failure to show up for big fights and the fact that his chin was basically gone by then. So there was, you know, McGregor sort of beating up on someone lowly. But nevertheless, it was his comeback after several years. You know, he hadn't fought since UFC 229. So nevertheless, still a big deal. Number three, his TKO over Chad Mendes, UFC 189. This was to gain the interim featherweight title. Now, some people say, yeah, well, Chad Mendes took the fight on, you know, like 12 days notice. And that's definitely something to take into consideration. But Connor also fought with, I believe, like a torn ACL. And against a wrestler, you know, and that was the best wrestler he's ever faced until Khabib. It was really a big deal he was able to beat him. And he got taken down twice in that fight, was able to get up both times. You know, eventually finished him. Number two, the TKO over Jose Aldo, UFC 194, to win the undisputed featherweight championship. Look, you know, one shot quitter. I think to me the most amazing part about that moment, I don't know, Mike, if you've ever seen the clip in the locker room, literally like 20 minutes before the fight. He's doing his last warm-ups, and his coach, John Kavanaugh, and his striking coach, Owen Roddy, are doing a drill where they're pretending to go at him, and he does the exact same movement, a sidestep with the left. It literally mirrored what he did 20 minutes later. So it really shows you how much preparation sometimes really just works out for this. And then lastly, number one was you know, unfortunately, you know, because this is a guy that we both, Mike and I both respect, TKO over Philadelphia's own Eddie Alvarez at UFC 205 to become the first ever simultaneous champ in UFC history to become the featherweight and lightweight champion. It was just utter domination. And that's why I chose it over the Aldo one. Aldo was one punch. When you can dominate a guy for two rounds, that to me, that's more of a great performance almost. So,
holding two titles in two different weight classes to me is a little bit more impressive than a BMF title. Nonetheless, we'll talk about that on another day. Dustin's top five moments is ranked by you.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, Dustin, it's, man, this guy's just been in so many wars. But so, again, not trying to beat up on our guy, Eddie Alvarez, but number five, was Dustin's TKO over Eddie Alvarez at UFC on Fox. This was actually a rematch. Dustin almost beat Eddie prior to, but Eddie landed some illegal knees and the fight had to be stopped. That's why they booked this rematch. It was on a UFC on Fox card in Calgary, Alberta. I think the Hart family was all in the front row. Actually, I have no idea. I just kind of envisioned that. Anyways.
Hold on a second. You said it wrong.
What?
Calgary, dramatic pause.
Alberta, Canada?
Alberta, Canada.
What did I say? Calgary, Canada?
No, you said Calgary, Alberta, Canada, but you forgot the dramatic pause, a la Lance Storm.
Am I allowed to talk about my quick Calgary story?
You can do whatever you want. We're on the radio.
I've told you about this story, right? How I got kicked out of a cab.
Did you go to the Calgary Stampede?
I did, but so on my teen tour, for those of you who don't know what a teen tour is, it's kind of like a traveling camp. They do it in America. I was in a cab going to a hospital in Calgary because I hurt my hip from a – I was being a little over-aggressive in a touch football game. Nevertheless, I was speaking with the cab driver, and I asked him how many people live in the city of Calgary. It's known as one of the largest cities in Canada. And I just was curious because the downtown, you have like, they have their own kind of Space Needle. There is a downtown, but it's a little small. It's a very sprawled out city. And he said 6 million. And I couldn't believe it. So I said, is that an American or Canadian? And he got so offended, he kicked us out of the cab. And we were sitting there stranded in front of an A&W fast food restaurant. I did not know that A&W was a fast food establishment.
It is in other places.
I think, the western part of the United States as well as Canada.
Yes. We can get into a whole conversation about that.
How often are we talking about Calgary? So there we go. Brett was kicked out of a cab in Calgary. The guy was... Really, I didn't think that was offensive, but nevertheless, I thought it was clever. Anyways, yes, going back to the list. So number four was Dustin's fight of the night, probably almost maybe even, I think it was runner up for fight of the year last year, unanimous decision victory over Dan Hooker on UFC on ESPN. We talked about this at length. It was actually one of our first episodes, Mike, last summer. This was just an amazing fight. Two highly talented guys. And that, to me, I think it really showed Poirier's heart and his skill. And just a tremendous fight. Number three was Poirier's TKO over Justin Gaethje at UFC on Fox. Just an absolute war. I believe this lasted to the fourth round. Poirier could barely walk for like the next several weeks. Because Gaethje just with his leg kicks, always amazing. I have a feeling these two are going to meet again and just give me another war. Number two, Dustin defeating Max Holloway at UFC 236 for the UFC Interim Lightweight Championship. This earned him the right to face Habib, which he did. Unfortunately, he lost at UFC 242. And number one, I have Dustin, actually his most recent fight, beating Connor at UFC 257. I mean, look, you beat Connor is such a name, at least at this stage. You know, he's not someone who's hanging around and just collecting losses. You beat Connor, it's a huge deal. And the fact that now he has the opportunity to do something that no one has ever done and beat Connor twice, that's huge. I know we're going to get into that in a minute. But so those are the top five performances for each.
Before we get into the historical perspective of trilogy fights, particularly in MMA, let's talk about it. So what is next for each guy? Win, lose, or draw? You never know. We talked about judging. You never know. So let's get into it. Let's get into it. What's next for Connor, win, lose, or draw?
Well, for Connor, so if he wins, he has options really across the board at 170 or 155. Dana White, I think, is trying to pigeonhole this and trying to control it. Because, look, the thing is with Conor, you never know with him. And if he wants something...
You can't control Conor McGregor.
Yeah, exactly.
Dana White is powerless here with Conor McGregor, which is kind of...
He's not entirely powerless, but I think... So he's trying to control the narrative. He was he's obviously, this is a huge event, so he's going to do the rounds of interviews. One of the interviews, he's like, yeah, if Conor wins, he's going to fight Charles Oliveira for the title. And even actually Conor, so I have now, Conor got to Vegas late Wednesday night. I heard his first interview was, Conor has his own website that does media for the UFC, independent of Conor. It's called MacLife. So they did the first interview with Conor. And there were some other interesting tidbits of that I'll get into in a minute. But he's like, yeah, when I win this fight, he's eyeing up fighting in Allegiant Stadium, the site of the Las Vegas Raiders. And it looks like right now he wants Charles Oliveira for the lightweight title. But if he wins, he could go to the UFC and be like, give me Kamaru Usman or whomever the welterweight champion is. Because, look, he has fought and he's 2-1 at welterweight. And, frankly, if he fights at welterweight and doesn't get completely embarrassed, he could then go drop down and fight right away in the lightweight title. It's been done. I mean, Dan Henderson lost at the 205 championship to Rampage Jackson. His next fight was the 185 title against Anderson Silva. So there's precedent there. But if he loses, this really hurts the McGregor brand as a fighter. He's no longer an elite competitor. But he will always have in his back pocket the trilogy fight with Nate Diaz. That's the one money fight he has left. But again, you'd rather have numerous money fights than one. I mean, this is a legacy fight right now, and this is a crossroads fight for Conor, which is why it's so big. You know, for Dustin, this is all about legacy and continuing to build on it. The opportunity to beat Conor McGregor twice. No one's ever done that. And he could be the first one to do that. Second, it will then allow him to fight for the lightweight title against Charles Oliveira, where actually, I think if Poirier wins, I think he'll be the prohibitive favorite against Oliveira going into that fight. And look, the more he wins, and the, you know, Poirier is a, he's a great guy. You know, he has the good fight charity that he started. He has grown and matured to be a great family man and just a great person. So I think there are more fans will follow him. You know, it's interesting. You know, we talk about him and I see that you could see the trending numbers in terms of on Instagram, his hashtag. So prior to the first Conor fight, he was at like 12,000. When you do the hashtags, like that many mentions, and now he's like well over 40. So it just shows you how much he's grown in terms of his popularity. So, you know, but if he loses, I think he has less to lose than Conor, right? Obviously, this stings. It hurts. But I do think that he could still work his way up for a title shot if he loses.
Yeah, he has a path.
He's a grinder, and he's a guy who if he loses, he's not going to take off for 2 years. He's going to fight again in 6 months, whatever. It's going to still be against a highly ranked guy. I think maybe your boy Beneil Dariush, something like that. You know, he's still a guy in the top five where you're still a win or two away. So I'm not saying this fight isn't important for Dustin because we just mapped out why it is, but I do think it is not as much doom and gloom if he loses.
How dare you not pronounce his name correctly? It is Beneil Dariush.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's kind of your thing. I didn't want to. You kind of trademarked the whole.
I'm going to be his own. What was the guy's name? What was Alberto Del Rio's own personal announcer? Ricardo Rodriguez?
Yes.
Yes, I'm going to be Beneil Dariush's Ricardo Rodriguez. I'm going to have to send him an email or something.
Yeah, you could be his hype man.
That's true. Before we get to the trilogies, and we're going to kind of do a little deep dive in, because this was fun looking back at it.
Yeah.
After you had really sent me a list, and I'm like, holy crap, I had forgotten about a lot of these. Go get buy some merch, would you? Go get a t-shirt or three or 10. TKO Store, TEEKOstore.com. You can get the In the Fight Show merchandise. I personally like all the designs. I think are awesome. I do like the fight shirt. You can customize it in different colors. I think it says something. We're going to be doing some special stuff with it. Different things. I've discussed it before. Like one of my ideas is come October, we're going to do a pink one with the benefiting a local women's breast cancer charity. So we can say, hey, look, here's the check. It's going to them. So you know that it's going there. Buy the shirts, buy the merch, support us, support the other fighters that are being supported by TKO Store, TEEKOstore.com for all your t-shirt needs. Let's get to this. Trilogy fights in combat sports professional wrestling, boxing, MMA, call it everything, I think are important. It's always a trilogy, right? So
because it's the rubber match, you know, and it's always and very rarely. I think we'll have to go through the list. I think for the most part, a trilogy results because it's a one. It's already it's one and one. We need to settle this kind of thing. I think there's only maybe one or two on that list where one of the fighters has a 2-0. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking of Tito over Ken Shamrock.
Right. Yeah. And that, and we can get to that. So why don't you run down? You've compiled this list, so I'm going to give you the credit here. I think I want you run down the list, and then we're going to talk about them, and we're going to kind of rank these things. Necessary, maybe like maybe we do a top five of most importance. They're going to be different. Yeah, you know, yours is going to be different than mine, I think. But I think we can agree on some of them.
Oh, absolutely. So I don't. I'm going to preface this by saying I don't know if this is the definitive list, but I think everyone will agree after I read them out. It's fairly exhaustive. So we have GSP versus Matt Hughes, BJ Penn versus Matt Hughes, BJ Penn versus Frankie Edgar, Frankie Edgar versus Gray Maynard, Daniel Cormier against Stipe Miocic, Cain Velasquez, Junior Dos Santos, Randy Couture versus Chuck Liddell, Fedor Emelianenko against Antonio Rodrigo Minotauro Nogueira, a.k.a. Big Nog, Rampage Jackson against Vanderlei Silva, Vanderlei Silva against Kazushi Sakuraba, Dominic Cruz, Uriah Faber, Ken Shamrock, Tito Ortiz, Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz, Forrest Griffin, Randy Couture, Vitor Belfort, Tim Sylvia, who also has shirts on TKO Store. Check them out, but first buy our shirts. Against Andre Arlovsky, Gilbert Melendez against Josh Thompson, Joachim Hansen against Shinya Aoki, and I believe Boss fought Ken Shamrock three times in Frank Shamrock three times in Pancrase. I might be mistaken there. But nevertheless, I think that that's a pretty long list.
That is a long and distinguished list. And if you Top Gun fans, you can quote the movie. Let's get into this here. I think this is a generational thing, right? Like,
absolutely.
This list is firmly built on different generations, like a beginning, a middle, and an end almost. Like,
hopefully not an end.
Well, and a now, I should say. Like, I look at Tito Ortiz, Forrest Griffin, right?
Yeah.
It was big. I say it was big for the moment. But in the grand scheme of things, how big was it?
Well, so I don't think it was – the grand scheme of things, I don't think it was that – I don't think it's among the top five of that list. But I think if you go through – all of them kind of had a purpose. To me, what was most beneficial about that, the first fight, I think, was resulted in the best thing possible. Remember, it was a very close fight.
Let's run it down in order then. So let's start. GSP versus Matt Hughes.
That one's super important. I think we got to go through. To me, that is a very good contender for getting in the top five.
I would agree with you. BJ Penn, Matt Hughes.
That one, not
important, but not as
first fight established BJ as a legend. Second fight kind of was BJ not in great shape, taking it on short notice, sort of stamping Hughes as a legend. Third fight was when Hughes was already washed and BJ knocked him out. See, the GSP one, right? First fight, Hughes is a legend. The next two fights were to establish GSP's greatness.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly with you. BJ Penn versus Frankie Edgar.
That's one where Frankie has swept it. And the third one, frankly, shouldn't have happened.
Right. It was a big fight that everyone was kind of rooting for the series, right? They wanted these guys to fight. But by the time Frankie Edgar, I might be speaking out of turn here, but by the time Frankie Edgar got to BJ Penn, it was almost like, okay, this needed to happen years ago.
Well, the third fight, yeah. So the first fight, remember, was that was the first ever Abu Dhabi card, and Edgar shocked BJ to win the lightweight championship, and then they quickly had a rematch, and Frankie further, actually, in that one, further dominated him. So, I mean, that one's important. I don't think it's as important as the next one on the list, which is Frankie Edgar, Gray Maynard. These are two top guys in their division fighting at the peak of their careers. Maynard wins the first, and then there's the amazing draw, which is still considered one of the best fights in UFC history, and then Edgar wins the rubber match. Like, to me, that is, to me, one of the best trilogies of all time. Because if you look at some of these, they're not always great fights. All three of those fights were amazing fights. So not only do you have divisional importance, but you also have entertainment value in the sense that they were all great fights. So to me, that's why it makes the list.
DC versus Stipe. I mean, this thing obviously just came to a close rather recently.
Yeah.
And really established the goats of the heavyweight division.
Yeah, it definitely established Stipe as the goat. For a while, it established DC as one of the goats because he won the first one. And then this is a weird one, right? So DC wins the first one. Second fight, DC is dominating. Stipe, as a champion, comes back, knocks him out in the fourth. And then Stipe, the third one was probably the most lackluster of all the fights. Stipe kind of, I wouldn't say dominates it, but controls the fight, right? 4-1, 5-0 on some cards. But it wasn't a blowaway. It was, the proverbial in American football, it was kind of like a 17-14 game. Close, but you kind of knew who won the game kind of thing. Whereas, then there's the next heavyweight one here. This is why this is a tough exercise. Cain Velasquez, JDS, Junior Dos Santos. Junior Dos Santos wins the first one. Cain Velasquez comes out and destroys Junior Dos Santos for the next two fights. But then Velasquez never fights again, essentially. Right. Well, he's always hurt.
He fought Brock Lesnar.
Well, this was after that.
No. For the Universal Heavyweight Championship or whatever.
Oh, yes, in Saudi Arabia.
Correct.
Yeah. Glad they both got out of there.
Let's not shortchange that here.
Yeah.
Now, see, this next one, to me...
This one has to be on the list.
This is a cornerstone trilogy. Randy Couture, Chuck Liddell. I mean, we can set that aside if we want to get back to it, or we talk about it now. I mean, this, to me, when we entered the realm of mixed martial arts, this was it. And we missed the first.
Yeah, we missed the first, which was a UFC 43 for an interim championship where Couture won. 52 was what the Ultimate Fighter led up to. Liddell wins, and it sets off the Liddell era. They have their trilogy at 57, and Liddell wins, further stamping him as the man. To me, this trilogy is super important for that initial growth spurt with the Ultimate Fighter. If you don't have these two guys, it may not work as well. They were stars and they were different.
Yeah, two completely different.
Yeah.
I don't want to say characters, but two completely different people. Chuck was a knockout artist, party guy, fun-loving guy, California guy.
Yeah.
You had Randy Couture, who was very calm, quiet.
Captain America.
Captain America.
Joe Rogan rode his nuts.
Yes, he did. And we did not like Joe Rogan for a long time because of that. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, that's definitely on the list. Let's go to the next one. Fedor versus Big Knot. Were all of those in Pride? I'm trying to...
Yes.
Okay, I was wondering if there was a crossover to like a Dream or one of those kind of deals.
No, and there is one caveat. One of the fights, the second one, ended in a no contest. So they fought... In a regular, I think it was Pride 25. I think it was the body blow event. And Fedor beat Big Nog for the heavyweight championship. Then they met in the finals of the heavyweight Grand Prix, and Fedor sustained a cut. Then they fought in the in Pride, the final conflict, Shockwave was always the New Year's event. So they fought in Shockwave. I think it was 04, maybe 05. And Fedor just destroyed him.
That was peak Fedor, or the beginning of peak Fedor.
Yeah, this was peak Fedor. And unfortunately, you could probably say it's almost peak Big Nog. I mean, Big Nog was an amazing fighter. He just couldn't beat Fedor, which is understandable. So, and that's an important one.
This next one ranks high on my list because this is just how I am. Rampage Jackson versus Wanderlei Silva. I know it's Wanderlei. I call him Wanderlei. Anyone who has a problem with it, you can take it up with me. And this is Pride to me, right? And then even UFC, like when they were getting ready, you know, there was the build to it. This is a key, at least in my fandom of MMA.
This is as good as it gets in terms of Pride, because also they were very competitive fights with famous endings. Then you get to the UFC and they're still highly ranked guys. Rampage knocks them out in the second round. And then there's actually a fourth fight in Bellator. So this spans like almost all of the major companies. So it's a really interesting one.
See, I think the next one is important too. Maybe not as important as Gracie's versus Sakuraba, but Wanderlei versus Sakuraba.
Yeah, to me, this is obviously strictly a Pride one. They kind of fought fairly quickly in a few years. This was Sakuraba was the man for what he did against the Gracies. This sort of cemented Wanderlei as the guy. So I don't think it's quite as important as others, but it's still important to mention here.
It would be one of my top fives, but that's because I'm biased to Pride Fighting Championships. Next one, Cruz and Faber. This started in WEC, correct? The day two in WEC, one in UFC,
in WEC, two in UFC. So, and the first one was won by Faber. And then
was the first one the jumping punch off the cage?
No. You're thinking of Anthony Pettis.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The
show with Ben Henderson. They only fought twice.
WEC. I got my little guys confused.
Yeah, I hear you. Faber beat Cruz in the first one at 145, and then Cruz beat Faber the next two times for the 135-pound belt in the UFC. This one probably, in terms of lighter weights, even below 155, this is the gold standard. So it may be on there. I don't know. It's probably the two most decorated until you get to Demetrius Johnson. It was before that era, kind of. So it's a very important one. I don't know if it's not top five, it's borderline.
Ken Shamrock, Tito Ortiz.
So the first fight, important.
Yes.
Definitely very important. I think it was probably the UFC's biggest event. It was UFC 40. Then they come back. They are coaches.
Very important though too. Like that, I think the Ultimate Fighter. We talked about Couture and Liddell.
Yeah,
if these guys aren't coaches, and that season doesn't occur, I don't know that we still. I think that assists in the trajectory of the.
Yeah, it helped. The UFC. Yeah, it definitely helped sustain the momentum of the Ultimate Fighter. But the problem is at that point, look, the first fight sucked. The first fight was complete dominance. Because you think Ken Shamrock, the peak of Ken Shamrock as a fighter was in the early to mid 90s. And, you know, he's fighting Ortiz in, you know, what, 2001 there? And then he's fighting him in 05, 06. Ken Shamrock was washed. The last two fights sucked. It almost looked like a professional against an amateur. So that's where I think it takes the last two almost didn't even need to happen.
The UFC did a great job of pumping up the legacy of Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz. leading into flight number two.
Yeah.
Which they should have. I mean, they did a really, really good job, but I would agree with you. Let's stick with Tito and Chuck.
This one's definitely more important. I think, look, Tito was the initial star of the UFC of the Zuffa era, and his training partner was Chuck Liddell. And, you know, the insiders all knew Chuck Liddell was a way better fighter. And then at some point, their friendship grew to become a rivalry. They, you know, Tito does lose to Randy Couture, and so does Chuck, but then they fight each other, and that fight made Chuck Liddell. He really became a star when he was the first one to finish Tito. Then they fight UFC 66. I think that was the first UFC pay-per-view to go over a million buys. I'm pretty sure. And then I guess I'll hear the trilogy fight, the third fight, the rubber. I mean, that fight should not have happened. And I am, yes, one of the 20,000 schmucks that actually bought that pay-per-view, the Golden Boy pay-per-view.
Yeah, I was thinking it was a Bellator, but I forgot it was a one-off.
It was a one-off Golden Boy MMA Productions.
When they were trying to get into the biz, so to speak.
Yeah.
Tito, again, on the list, Tito versus Forrest Griffin. We kind of already talked about that.
Yeah.
I think it was important for a time frame, especially with Forrest Griffin. But in their overall scheme of things,
Yeah, exactly. It helped. The first fight particularly reestablished Tito as a contender and also established Forrest Griffin and stamped, to me, it really put a stamp of legitimacy on the Ultimate Fighter, because you had Forrest Griffin, the original Ultimate Fighter, who's now almost beating Tito Ortiz. Like, we didn't think that was possible.
No,
because we didn't understand that, frankly, the first Ultimate Fighters were stacked with guys that Dana White wanted in the UFC anyways.
Right, yeah. You know, the early Ultimate Fighter, you were thinking this is a legit tournament for guys to get in. Little do you know, because you weren't following the regional scene, there was no My MMA Newses and all that kind of stuff. You weren't following it the way it is now. You didn't realize Cage Fury Fighting Championships was a thing, or Ring of Combat, or Art of War. I mean, I just named three that are within a 30-mile sphere of where we are.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't realize that that was a thing. So, yeah, we didn't know how stacked that actually was.
Yeah.
Next one, Couture, Vitor Belfort.
So this one was interesting in that, you know, Randy Couture's one of his first fights was actually defeating Vitor Belfort and stopping the hype train. This is back at, like, I'm just going to like guesstimate, like UFC 18. Like, this was when Vitor was still like 19 years old and just completely dominating people. And in the MMA sphere, he was sort of viewed as like Mike Tyson. And Randy Couture came in and just did what Randy always does and stifles you, dirty boxing, the wrestling, and, you know, just soundly defeated him. The second fight, Belfort actually won beat Couture because he cut his eye and got the belt. And then Couture quickly rematched and dominated him. So to me, it's frankly a domination of one guy over the other. I don't think it's as important, but obviously it is a trilogy, so it made the list. I don't think it should make the top five, though.
No, it shouldn't make the top five. Next one, Tim Sylvia, t-shirts on tkostore.com. Tim Sylvia, Andre Arlovsky. I forgot this was a trilogy, and we saw one in person, correct?
No, we didn't see it. We saw Andre Arlovsky against, may rest in peace, Justin Eilers.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
At UFC 53. Yeah. So this one is a tale of both guys knocking each other out quick, followed by an incredibly boring 5-round fight at UFC 61, where Sylvia outboxed Arlovsky. Really boring fight.
So they fought three times. That's it.
They fought three times. Yeah. It was important at the time for the heavyweight division, but yeah, nothing. Yeah.
So now this one, Gilbert Melendez, Josh Thompson.
Super important in the realm of Strikeforce.
Agreed.
Probably Strikeforce's most important trilogy. Just, I don't think it. And by the way, we're going to go by best fights. It's them and then the Edgar Maynard trilogy, easily. And maybe Rampage, Vanderlei, the first two. but it just, it was Strikeforce, and maybe this is a UFC bias. It was, you know, the most important one for the secondary organization at the time. Great fighters. Gilbert Melendez should have been a UFC champion. I scored his fight over Ben Henderson. I thought Melendez won. Nevertheless, great fights. Just, yeah. It's a good trilogy, which for those who have not had an opportunity to watch it, if you have Fight Pass, I would highly recommend you check that out.
And the last one, Hansen versus Aoki.
This one to me is kind of typifies the Japanese MMA scene. Obviously, Joachim Hansen is, I believe he is Norwegian, but nevertheless, he was a star in the Japanese MMA scene. This was Bushido, the lighter weight pride fighters. Very good, you know, but from a historical perspective, the growth of MMA, it won't make the top. So I guess, you know, so now to get kind of break it down, the only one I wrote down as a definite is Couture versus Liddell.
Okay. So I have, in my mind, I have three that are definites. GSP versus Matt Hughes.
Yeah.
To establish George St. Pierre against Matt Hughes. You know, it really made George St. Pierre. And the shame of it all is whatever is going on with the contract stuff. I think we lost the best of GSP, which is crazy. Like, think about that. Like, how many years has he not fought?
So I think the contract stuff definitely aided it, but it's also, look, GSP, you know, for a while had to, he walked away. So there's that too. You know, I mean, he just, I mean, there was a 4-year break between Hendricks and Bisping. And I think now frankly, if there's one fight I think the contract has stolen from us, it's GSP against Khabib.
I agree. And
that's a shame because that's an all-timer.
Yeah. We talk about stadium shows. We want to talk about filling a stadium. That probably fills Allegiant Stadium.
Oh, yeah. That fills any. Yeah. It's a massive, massive fight.
So what was the other one that was on your list? You said Liddell Couture, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. So those are the two I think definitively on the list.
So they are definitively on my list. I have Wanderlei Silva Sakuraba on my list. And this is probably showing my pride bias here.
Yes.
But it established, well, from the global MMA scene,
it
established Wanderlei Silva as the next guy. And I think that kind of rode into his Rampage fights, and it rode into the, we want to see Chuck and Wanderlei go at it.
I see that.
It's a complete,
frankly,
it's a complete
I kind bet. Of, it's a I would put, bet. I mean, if I'm going to put a Wanderlei one in there, I'd put the Rampage one in there. I like Sakuraba too. I'm just saying, you know, the Rampage Wanderlei fights in Pride, two of the greatest fights of all time. And then their fight and their rivalry extended into the UFC in a time where both of them, it was a big deal when they fought. And it sort of further, even though Rampage had already had been the belt holder, this was right around the time. After this, he then goes on to become B.A. Baracus in the remake of the A-Team. So, you know, there's that too.
Fair enough. DC versus Stipe. For a more recent pick from the heavyweight division, like we got Fedor and Big Nog. What's more important? I don't know.
So, to me, I think between DC and Stipe, or Kane versus JDS, and I think I'd go DC versus Stipe.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I shortchanged Kane Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, but that's kind of where I had him on my
process. Honestly, it's sort of prophetic that you did that, right? Because Kane Velasquez, healthy, and, you know, there's always the joke because the one fight he had in Mexico City, he didn't train in Mexico because, you know, with the – so sea level and healthy Kane Velasquez is the greatest heavyweight of all time. Problem is he didn't train up in the Mexico City altitude for Verdum, and he was never healthy. This guy just could not say he would have been the most dominant force and probably a gigantic star in both Mexico and America. Remember, because he's Mexican-American, his father from Mexico. It never was meant to be. He pushed himself so hard his body broke. So it's but yes, that's why I think I go DC against Stipe.
All right, so we have GSP Hughes. We
have Couture Liddell, DC versus Stipe.
Okay. Who else?
I think Edgar Maynard.
I would agree.
Because also this is the only one where it's 1-1-1. And it was all in a fairly quick time period when they were at their best. You know, some of these, one of the guys is washed. Both of the guys are washed. And these were just amazing fights. So to me, there's the Jersey connection there. But to me, I think it belongs on there.
And does number five go to Rampage Vanderlei? Does it go to Melendez versus Thompson? I think is a very good trilogy. And you're right, but it was Strikeforce. Like I know I don't want to say that condescendingly, but it wasn't. If it was in the UFC, it's a totally different game.
Yeah, that's the only thing that holds that back. And frankly, because if you think about it, if it was in the UFC, would it be as important? Would they've even fought three times?
You're right. Cruz Faber. I'm looking at the list here. Do you go historical perspective? Do you say Tito and Chuck?
Tito Chuck is important, except to me, I think by doing that, I almost feel like as an exercise, you don't want to pay homage to that third fight.
I would agree there. So Fedor Nog.
All right, so I'm to me the last spot.
I'm leaving this for you because I can't.
Cruz Faber, Kanji, Rampage Vanderlei. I think I'm gonna go Rampage Vanderlei.
Okay, Boss Rutten, Frank Shamrock. Have we established that they fought three times?
I still haven't looked it up.
Because if they did, they I think it has to be in there.
I don't know if it has to be in there.
It's Boss Rutten.
I love Boss Rutten, and I've loved watching those fights. But to me, it's Pancras. It's so early. They all kind of fought each other a lot. You know what I mean? It just there weren't even close strikes. How can we include that?
Okay, fair enough. Pancrase was kind of the genesis of the Ring of Honor pure title. They liked that idea and they ran with it. That's neither here nor there. We have to wrap up the show.
Yeah, we did the deep dive.
We did the deep dive. A couple points of news before we wrap this up. One, Fighting Championships is going to announce a North American show. Check out inthefight.net for that. And it sounds like we're going to have the return of a Diaz.
Yeah, looks like Nick Diaz is going to be as part of the co-main event against Robbie Lawler, a matchup 17 years in the making, or a rematch 17 years in the making, co-main event for UFC 266 in September.
Take yourself off a mute, idiot. I guess the other thing we need to mention is this is good for Nick, for the Diaz brothers, is you're no longer testing for weed in the Nevada State Athletic Commission, nor should they at this point. It's been very much established. It's a medicinal thing.
Yeah, I think that's something maybe we'll do a deeper dive on next week, but it's great to see Nick Diaz back. Could also be another potential fight for McGregor should he lose.
Congrats to CM Punk. You have had a loss taken off of your record, again, due to marijuana, which I don't understand. That makes no sense. We're going to out. No, it's not. Anyway, support those who support us. Sportinarium.com, Sportinarium Radio, Michael's Glass Company, 215-338-3293, The Paul's Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in the heart of Ardmore, TKO Store, TEEKOstore.com. Follow us on all social. At ITF Show, inthefight.net. I am Mike. That is Brett. Enjoy McGregor Poirier 3. Brett's picks will be out this weekend.